good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. I guess it was earlier today, we have declared war on Iran. Are you aware of that? There's been a declaration of war against Iran. This is the Lieberman-John Kyle Iran Amendment. It passed by a vote of 76 to 22. The amendment threatens to, quote, combat, contain, and stop, end quote, Iran via, quote, military instruments, end quote. Senator Jim Webb, Democrat of Virginia, called the amendment, quote, Cheney's fondest pipe dream, and said it could lead or it could read as a backdoor method of gaining congressional validation for military action. This is pretty astonishing. I didn't realize that we went to war by amendments now. I thought we went to war by being lied to, but apparently we go to war now by amendments. The vote was 75 to 22, or 76 to 22, yep, do the math. Hillary Clinton voted to go to war. Harry Reid voted to go to war. Chuck Schumer voted to go to war. McCain and Obama decided not to vote at all. This is pretty astonishing stuff, isn't it? It's a declaration of war. Essentially, this is part of the 2008 Defense Authorization Bill. This is the one that also will contain $190 billion more dollars for more slaughter and butchery and murder and death and arms and legs blown off in soon to be three theaters of war. Just thought you ought to know, the vote was 76 to 22. The Senate passed the Lieberman-Kyle Amendment. And as Jim Webb said, this is Cheney's fondest pipe dream. Holy jumping God. Okay. And Lieberman, what a warmongering little bastard Lieberman is. I mean, every day that goes by, Lieberman does something else that he's kind of like Bill O'Reilly. He just does something else that is more nauseous and more disgusting. And as far as people who think Hillary Clinton is a liberal, will you please, for Christ's sake, stop it? She's not a liberal. She may be the next president of the United States. Fine. But she's not a liberal. She's not a progressive. She is a corporate candidate. She may be the least of all the evils. I don't know anymore. I really don't. But she's a warmonger, just like the rest of them. Do you understand that? Why do people insist in proclaiming Hillary Clinton to be some sort of a progressive or a liberal? She's not. The only Republicans who voted against war with Iran are Chuck Hagel and Richard Lugar. The Democrats who said no more war, Biden, Bingaman, Boxer, Brown, Byrd, Cantwell, Dodd, Feingold, Harkin, Inouye, Kennedy, Kerry, Klobuchar, Minnesota, Leahy, Lincoln, McCaskill, Tester, Webb, and Wyden. The rest of the Democrats said, "Yeah, let's go kill some more. Let's go kill some more. Let's go have more death, more war, more destruction, more wounded." PTSD'd out of their minds, Americans, more brain damage, more dead corpses, more bodies, more blood, gore, guts, more wasting of the U.S. Treasury, which is just about ready to expire. Oh, my God. So, in place now is all the legal instruments needed by this rat bastard in the White House. So I don't know, maybe these kind of scary bloggers who have been talking about were ready to go to war with Iran. Maybe they've been right. You know, I made some offhand remark a couple of weeks ago, like you know, some of these fear mongering websites are just that, fear mongering. But you know, I may have to take it back and say, look, guys, I'm sorry. You know, you were right. I'm wrong. I didn't think this would happen. But that pig Lieberman, what God, the damage from this guy, huh? And he's truly in the catbird seat. The Democrats dare not rein him in. Of course, why should they? More than half the Democrats want war with Iran. Son of a bitch. This is astonishing, isn't it? Well, it's astonishing to me. And, I try to make claims of political sophistication, but sometimes I am stunned about how the degree to which I am utterly naive about this sort of stuff. Steve wrote in last night about the caller from Florida, Armand, who said Hillary is the most corrupt politician in the history of corruption and the history of politicians and yada, yada, yada. And he started with his list, and, you know, I just said, oh, come on, stop it. But Steve writes in, I caught the tail end of that call, but I have a question. And before the question, I'd like to point out that the 9/11 commission that investigated the worst attack in U.S. history had about a $3 million budget and had a time limit of a year. Now, having said that, okay, if Hillary Clinton is so corrupt, money laundering, et cetera, blah, blah, then how come after 6 years and $70 million to investigate Bill and Hillary, why didn't they find any of these massive amounts of corrupt and criminal activities? Curious minds want to know. Yeah, well, that's essentially the point. I don't think there is a married couple in the history of the United States, political history, religious history, social history, labor history, I don't care what history, all history, there's not another couple that was so investigated as Bill and Hillary Clinton for anything, even if they fired people in the travel office because they were cutting deals with reporters. Everything was investigated. No, there is not that kind of penny ante corruption with Bill and Hillary. There just isn't. It doesn't exist. It's not there. Does anyone think for one second that if the Arkansas Project or any of these right-wing Nazis had found any of this to be true, it wouldn't have been included in Ken Starr's official report, and the Republicans would... I mean, come on. So stop with that nonsense. I don't pass rules on this program, but I'm going to right now. I do not want to hear another phone call to this program ever that alludes to Bill and Hillary's drug dealing or any of that. They killed Vince Foster. Stop it. Now, if you want to discuss Hillary being a corporate candidate who does not have the best interests of the United States at heart because she's a corporate candidate, or if you want to discuss that with any of the candidates, fine. But leave this bat-squeeze nonsense on the doorstep before you come into my office to talk. Fair enough. Aye. Yeah, the Clintons and the Queen of England, they run a drug cartel whose tentacles stretch throughout the solar system. I've got to say something about the Michael Vick case coming back after the break here. Vick is in deep doo-doo. How old is he? 27-year-old professional football player. I'm not going to cut him any slack for what he pled guilty to, helping to kill 6 to 8 dogs, among other things. That's really disgusting. And dog fighting is disgusting. But, you know, I've got a question for you. Michael Vick now faces as much as 15 years in prison for that. And George W. Bush is responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, including almost 3,800 American soldiers. And that son of a bitch is not facing anything. So carefree with a joyless heart. Then sometimes again it seems all I have is worth. Then you finally see my other side.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
21 past the hour. So a federal judge has placed tighter restrictions now on Michael Vick after our former Atlanta Falcons quarterback tested positive for marijuana. Jesus, God, is this guy the dumbest man ever to be facing sentencing on federal charges and now being indicted on state charges? You know, he gets loaded, and knowing that he's going to be drug tested, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything that infuriates a federal judge more, or any judge, than when a term or condition of, you know, not being locked up, waiting for a sentencing is when somebody just deliberately thumbs their nose at the judge. I mean, you know my feelings about marijuana. I think it's an absolute joke to have that kind of restriction. But here we are. I mean, so Michael Vick gets high, gets blood tested, and now he's restricted to his home with electronic monitoring, subject to random drug testing. He's scheduled for sentencing December 10th. He faces up to 5 years in prison on the federal charges. Now, because he has attorneys that are incompetent asses, a total waste of time, these attorneys, they allowed him to go into federal court with a plea deal, making himself vulnerable for 5 years in prison. Now, again, I'm not arguing whether 5 years of a person's freedom is a proper price for the death of killing six dogs. I don't happen to think that it is. I just don't. I'm sorry, and I'm an animal lover. I love dogs, but I don't think that's the issue here. And I'll get to the issue. But his utterly incompetent attorneys, Michael Vick's, allowed him to go into federal court, make a plea agreement that exposes him to prison time without including in that agreement some sort of deal on the state charges. Now he's been indicted on state charges. His plea in the federal charges is prima facie evidence that he is in fact guilty of the state charges. There's no attorney who could take this case. And what is he facing in the state of, Virginia? What he's facing an additional 10 to 15 years in prison. Here's a guy who could be sentenced to 20 years in prison for what he did with dogs. Yes, killed them, tortured them. Okay, I'm not 20 years in prison. And then he goes out and smokes pot. And George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest of these Republicans and Democrats who continue to authorize the use of force, American soldiers and Marines, American money that we are desperately, we don't have anymore. And nobody, we can't even impeach these sons of bitches. Michael Vick is facing 20 years in prison for killing dogs. George W. Bush and his posse are facing nothing for killing hundreds of thousands of people. This is the kind of stuff that makes me insane. Now, don't send me an email condemning Michael Vick for what he did. Really, that's not the point. I'm not defending Michael Vick. But a system of so-called justice that puts a man in danger of 20 years in prison for dog killing, and a person who's responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths all around the planet, and he's not even held accountable for it, is a system that sucks big time. Oh my God! What do you do when you see these two stories? When you know that Michael Vick is possibly going to prison for 20 years. His entire career is over. That's it. Ended. Done. Finished. I also understand that he's being sued now for $2.5 million or something. This man is really being crucified. Does he deserve it? He deserves some kind of punishment for what he did. But Jesus, God in heaven, His entire life is being destroyed. And George W. Bush and these Republican murderers, nothing happens. Nothing. 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 Absolutely nothing. Nothing. And I don't even like professional football. I gave up on professional sports 10 years ago, 12 years ago. All professional sports. They are all corrupt, drug-addled, nothing more than more corporate America jerking people's brains around on Saturdays and Sundays. I hate professional sports. College sports are getting close. They're almost to be condemned, too. All right, stick around. When we come back, just a couple of words on this pig, Bill O'Reilly. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. And he agrees with me. It's all gone crazy. Well, my wife returns from taking my little girl to school. She got beads of perspiration as she tries to keep her cool. She says that message don't get no better. There's gonna come a day, someone's gonna get killed out there. And I turn to her and say, Texas. She says, what?
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Molloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. Bill O'Reilly, how could one person, you know, aside from being an obnoxious ass, to be so socially or culturally ignorant is this guy? He's astonishing, isn't he? I try to watch as much Oberman as I can every night. It depends on how prepared I am for my program, whether or not I get to watch Oberman's program. And I know how often Oberman makes it to the worst, worser, and worst list. I'm sorry, O'Reilly. But the guy is just such an ass. The latest thing, in case you haven't heard, he told a radio audience after having dinner at a famed, a famous Harlem restaurant, Sylvia's, he told his radio audience that he couldn't get over the fact, his words, he couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between the black-run Sylvia's restaurant and other restaurants. He said, here's a direct quote, quote, it was like going into an Italian restaurant in an all-white suburb in the sense that people were sitting there and they were ordering and having fun. And there wasn't any kind of craziness at all. End quote. Jesus. O'Reilly was having dinner with Al Sharpton. Yeah, Al Sharpton. And O'Reilly is on the record as saying when he and Sharpton walked in, you know, there's a, oh, God, look, two superstars. O'Reilly, falafel man, is so full of himself. This guy's heading for a big fall. You know it as well as I do. And this may be it. But he made these comments about his wonderment about black folk and their social life in on his radio program. When was it, yesterday or last week? Now it's all over out there what he said. And Bill Shine, senior vice president for programming at Fox News Channel, said, quote, this is nothing more than left-wing outlets stirring up false racism accusations for ratings. It's sad. And the left-wing outlets, of course, are CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, MSNBC, The Washington Post, New York Times, New York Daily News, New York Post, New Yorker Magazine, Time Magazine, and Newsweek. Yeah. Now, O'Reilly said all this during a discussion about race relations with Juan Williams, a Fox News analyst. And if I'm not mistaken, Juan Williams is a black man. And Juan Williams sat there and listened to this doofus saying this stuff without saying, Riley, are you out of your mind? He also noted that, guess what he did recently? He went to an Anita Baker concert. Oh, my God. He went to see a dark-skinned entertainer. And he said, you know, the audience there was evenly mixed between blacks and whites. Really? No kidding, Bill. And then he said this, quote, the band was excellent. And they were dressed in tuxedos. And this is what white America doesn't know. Particularly, people don't have a lot of interaction with black Americans. They think the culture is dominated by Twista, Ludacris, and Snoop Dogg. No, O'Reilly, you dumb snot. White America knows this. You don't. What a jerk. Now, this is the kind of racism, this insidious, destructive racism. You know, black folk must sit back and listen to this kind of stuff and go, oh, my God. White people are dumber than dirt. You know, it's another one of those instances that just makes me, as a white person, as a Caucasian, I cringe. Here's a guy who talks to, whose program picks up at least 600,000-700,000 television viewers every night. He has a radio program that is probably carried on 10 times as many stations as my program is, or anybody here at Nova M or Air America, right? And this dumb cockroach makes statements like that. Now, O'Reilly is a Caucasian who doesn't have a clue. He doesn't have a clue. This guy would not under... I'm not going to go on a big rant about O'Reilly. I really am not, because he's just another one of these right-wing slobs whose skin contains a sloshing mass of wasted DNA. That's all he is, this guy. A jerk. But consider his attitude with what Bob Herbert in the New York Times wrote the other day. Herbert wrote, I applaud the thousands of people, many of them poor, who traveled from around the country to protest in Jean, Louisiana last week. But what I really like to say, or see, Herbert writes, is a million angry protesters marching on the headquarters of the National Republican Party in Washington. Enough is enough. Last week, the Republicans showed once again just how anti-black their party really is. The Republicans have spent the last 40 years insulting, disenfranchising, and otherwise stomping on the interests of black Americans. Last week, the residents of Washington, D.C., with its majority black population, came remarkably close to realizing a goal they have sought for decades, a voting member of Congress to represent them. A majority in Congress favored the move, and the House had already approved it. But the Republican minority in the Senate, with the enthusiastic support of President Bush, rose up on Tuesday and said, no way, baby. At least 57 senators favored the bill, a solid majority, but the Republicans prevented a key motion on the measure from receiving the 60 votes necessary, there it is again, to move it forward in the Senate. The bill died. Now, at the same time that the Republicans were killing congressional representation for D.C. residents, the major Republican candidates for president were offering a collective slap in the face to black voters nationally by refusing to participate in a long-scheduled, nationally televised debate focusing on issues important to minorities. We talked about this last week. Herbert goes on and says, the radio and television personality Tavis Smiley worked for a year to have a pair of these debates televised on PBS, one for the Democrats, one for the Republicans. The Democratic debate was held in June, and all the major candidates participated. The Republican debate is scheduled for Thursday, tomorrow. But Giuliani, McCain, Romney, and Thompson have all told Mr. Smiley, no way, baby! They won't be there. They can't be bothered debating issues that might be of interest to black Americans. After all, they're Republicans! Republicans, the party of the Southern strategy, the party that ran like panting dogs after the votes of segregationist whites who were repelled by the very idea of giving equal treatment to blacks. Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, they all ran with that lousy pack. In 1981, Herbert goes on and talks about how Reagan went to Philadelphia, Mississippi in 1980 to announce his candidacy. Oh, my God. Where three young civil rights workers, two white, one black, were brutally butchered. by the Klan that happened to be the sheriff's department. And then there's this. Now, I'm going to say the N-word because I'm quoting a quoting. All right? So if you don't want to hear the N-word, go away for a minute. Herbert writes, in 1981, during the first year of Mr. Reagan's presidency, the late Lee Atwater gave an interview to a political science professor at Case Western Reserve University explaining the evolution of the Southern strategy. Quote, you start out in 1954 by saying nigger, 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 said Atwater. By 1968, you can't say nigger anymore. That hurts you. Backfires. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. You're getting so abstract now that you're talking about cutting taxes. And all these things you're talking about are totally economic things. And a byproduct of them is that blacks get hurt worse than whites. End quote. In 1991, Herbert writes, the first President Bush poked a finger in the eye of black America by selecting the egregious Clarence Thomas for the seat on the Supreme Court that had been held by the revered Thurgood Marshall. The fact that there is a rigid quota on the court permitting one black and one black only to serve at a time is itself racist. But Bush seemed to be saying, all right, you want your black on the court? Boy, have I got one for you! Republicans improperly threw black voters off the rolls in Florida in the contested presidential election of 2000. The Republicans sent Florida state troopers into the homes of black voters to intimidate them in 2004. And then Herbert concludes by saying blacks have been remarkably quiet about the sustained mistreatment by the Republican Party, which says a great deal about the quality of black leadership in the U.S. It's time for that passive masochistic posture to end. And so much of this comes, and that's the end of Herbert's column, so much of this comes from the kind of stuff that you hear from Don Imus and Bill O'Reilly, and these guys should know better. They're in media. They understand. Allegedly, They are hip to what's going on. They understand the social intersections in this country between black and white, Jew and Gentile, gay and straight. That's the men and women. That's the thought. Obviously, they do not. But when this race thing comes up, and I've said this before, the race thing is never going to go away. Never in this country. If there is still a United States, hell, if there's still an Earth 300 years from now, you are going to have some Caucasian go on whatever passes for radio or holograms or television or interstellar beaming programs, and they're going to say something. You know, I was on a spaceship last night on the way to Mars, and there were black people there. Black people on a spaceship! Damn! In your mind that there still exists a plan to bring down a black fist. See, the struggle is uphill, life's at a standstill, jackpot chill, now we don't act real, and every living moment got us singing the blues. A sole provider can't afford the baby shoes. That's the cycle so many of us go through.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Oh, I love it when you talk like that. 10 before the hour, regarding what's going to be happening on this planet 200 years, 300 years from now, where it concerns racism, Prairie 2 writes, hey Mike, 300 years from now, the light-shelled cockroaches will be discriminating against the dark-shelled cockroaches. Oh, that's a pretty negative outlook. GM and the UAW have reached a deal. They returned to work today after the two sides reached an agreement. Now, the key provision, and we talked about this the other night, the key provision of this new contract is a healthcare trust. General Motors is getting out of the healthcare business. And, well, it should. But it's going to cost them as much as $50 billion. They're going to set up a trust fund. Workers and retirees will receive the current coverage until the trust is put in place, and then there might have to be some adjustments. Although I heard Ron Gettelfinger today say that this trust will keep the health care going for current workers, active workers, and retirees for as long as 80 years. The agreement includes this memorandum of understanding that will establish an independent health care trust, as well as other changes to the national agreement. One of the things that didn't get a lot of attention today, and I think union members should pay attention to this, Gettelfinger confirmed in a radio interview that there was a signing bonus for workers to move on to the next contract that will run until 2011. But he declined comment. So this means it's true. He declined comment on reports that the new contract contains a two-tier wage program. Ah, here we go. Sharply lower rates for any new workers hired by GM. There it is. Now, I happen to know Gettelfinger. As a matter of fact, I used to work for him when I worked for IE America Radio Network. Gettelfinger is not the least interested in the workers at the United Auto Workers. He's what is referred to in the union business as a pork chopper. That has to do with tying a pork chop around these old farts' necks just to keep them entertained and occupied so they don't get hungry. Gettelfinger is not a union man. So the deal he signed, obviously, since he wouldn't deny it, includes a two-tier wage program. Here it comes, truth seekers. Here it comes. Now, of course, this will make the union haters in this country just salivate and happy. It'll make them all go, ah, well, goddamn unions should have been killed a long time ago. Okay. You can't argue against that kind of insane ignorance. So the workers, retired workers and their families, will now take full responsibility for through this trust fund for their own health care coverage. And apparently, new workers going to work at GM not only will not receive the standard kind of health care that General Motors and the UAW were famous for hammering out, but now will also enter into the auto industry at a reduced rate, a two-tiered wage program that will further the decline of what used to be in this country a good earning, a good wage, if you could stand the monotony. But industrial America is pretty much broken. It really is. You know, I live in a metropolitan area. I live outside a metropolitan area of close to 5-6 million people. And there is a GM plant here that's going to close in another 18 months. There's a Ford Motor plant here, too. That's also going to close, by the way. But other than those two factories, I cannot tell you. Kathy, do you know of any heavy industry that's done here? What manufacturing is done in Atlanta? This is a city of 6 million people. No, seriously. Do you know?
Do we still bottle Coca-Cola here?
No, we don't. There may be a Coca-Cola bottler here, but that's, no. That's like, you know, there's McDonald's here, too.
I think they make Cabbage Patch Kids up
in the mountains.
Cleveland, Georgia.
That's up in the mountains. That doesn't count. Further up in the mountains from where we are. But seriously, you were born and raised here. Can you think of...
I know that there's some Hispanic businesses that make pork rinds and some Asian businesses that literally, I'm serious, they make
fortune cookies. Yeah, that's right up the road
and
here.
And they do. They make some tortillas at the Hispanic... I mean, they're,
no, thank you.
And there's a brewery... A couple of breweries. I think they're local breweries. And
Kathy, thank
you. I know
you.
We used to make T-shirts in Scottsdale.
Kathy, thank you. Oh, God. But there you have it. I mean, I grew up in a city of 300,000 people. And we were a feeder city for Detroit. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio. And there was a factory every 10 feet. That's probably why half the people in Toledo, Ohio are dying of blood poisoning and lung disease and kidney failure, and they need heart transplants because as far as zoning was concerned back in Toledo in the 40s and 50s, it didn't matter. Put the factory up right there. I grew up right next door to a potato chip factory, but that was kind of cool. But we had rubber factories, glove factories, ball bearing factories, transmission factories, atomizer factories, cable factories, axle factory. Everything was a feeder for Detroit. And here I live now in a metro area of 6 million people, and I can't tell you one damn thing that is manufactured except tortillas. We're coming up on this break, all right. When we come back, you know, Bush made a big deal the other day about this horrific oppression that's going on in Burma, that has been going on in Myanmar, that has been going on there. But there's something I'm assuming that most Americans are not aware of, why the oppression is occurring there, why the military junta there is so determined to now they're murdering monks and nuns. And there's a direct connection back to Bush. So while Bush stands in front of the United Nations and talks about sanctions against the oppressors in Burma, Myanmar, he's lying through his teeth. He is part of the system that provides the oppression. You may find this interesting. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. The situation in Myanmar, in Burma, Myanmar, is not new. It's been going on for a number of years. But apparently, the world was informed in no uncertain terms of the concern of our glorious first family here in the United States over the cause of democracy and freedom in Burma. On September 19th, Laura Bush told a UN roundtable discussion that the U.S. government would take steps to ensure that the issue of democracy in Burma was not overlooked, her words, not overlooked in the Security Council. Well, that's wonderful, Laura. However, she made no mention of a main pillar of support for Burma's military junta, and that is corporate carpetbaggers. Jay Sri Raman, writing at truthout.com, put this all out for people, even like me, to understand. As Raman writes, you know, Bush the other day decided to take a hand in the matter and take on the junta. And on September 24th, National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley proclaimed that the president was to, quote, unveil new steps, end quote, against the junta and, quote, try and force the regime into a change, end quote. Try and force the regime. That sounds like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. Oh, well. However, the new steps that were laid out by Stephen Hadley did not seem to include any sanctions against the U.S. or any other foreign big money operation aimed at profiteering at the expense of the Burmese people. Now, what asset, what resource do the Burmese people have? Starts with O, ends in L, has an I in the middle. That's right! The pro-democracy movement, as is being butchered tonight in Burma, has repeatedly pointed out that the military rulers have allowed ruthless exploitation of the country's oil and gas resources by multinational corporations. And in the process, this military junta has enriched itself. It is not going to the people. This is just like the countries in Africa that have resources, whether it's bauxite or aluminum or oil or gold or diamonds. The people get nothing. The multinational corporations glom it up and make sure that the murderers at the top of the heap in these countries, including Burma, are well fed. Now, as Sri Raman writes, the offshore activities of these corporations have made no difference to the grinding poverty of the people of that country. Ironically, in fact, the policies have led to a situation where the junta ordered a 500% hike in fuel prices. That's what triggered the revolt a few months ago, August 2007. Now, the contribution of a giant U.S. corporation to the situation has been conspicuous. That means it's our fault? Prominent among the multinationals included in a dirty list of such companies was Chevron, formerly Unocal. Authors of the list noted that Chevron was one of the joint venture partners developing the Yadana offshore gas fields in Burma, which earns the military regime millions of dollars. Texaco is also owned by Chevron. The Unocal Corporation, now remember, who is the soon-to-be deposed president of Afghanistan? That's right, Hamid Karzai. What did he do before he was appointed president by George W.? Oh, that's right, he was a lobbyist for Unocal. The Unocal Corporation figured earlier in internationally backed Burmese campaigns against forced labor. What that means is, don't misunderstand that that sentence. Unocal was involved in forced labor. The campaigns to stop it were put together around the globe. Unocal was involved not just in forced labor, but land appropriation and other gross human rights violations in the gas and oil projects initiated by the junta behind the people's backs. The affected villages came together in 1996 and sued Unocal and a French company, Total, for complicity in the abuses. The villagers charged that the companies knew about and benefited from the Burmese army's use of torture, rape, and unlawful land seizures to uproot people from areas slated for development. The Bush regime has not cared all these years, going all the way back to 1996, 11 years ago, to persuade either its old or newfound allies to discipline their own corporate giants in the cause of Burmese democracy. And the article goes on. You can find it at truthout.org. But another example of either the monumental ignorance of this twit in the White House or his unbelievable hypocrisy and duplicity. He is going to stand there. Here's the weird part. Most of the world knows this. It's just we Americans who don't. Until I saw this article, I had no idea that Burma had gas and oil fields, onshore or off. No idea. Who knew? Well, part of the reason for my ignorance, I guess, is because I have such a crack corporate media in this country who does its damnedest to keep me informed about missing starlets and their illegitimate babies and whether or not, what's her name, dances with underwear on. So while Bush stands there in front of the United Nations and talks about the gross human rights violations, and they are occurring tonight, people are being shot dead in the streets of Yangon, used to be Rangoon. They're being shot dead because the military juntas that are paid millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, the members of these juntas, so that the international oil companies, some of which are as American as apple pie, can continue to exploit the resources of Burma and the people. See, it never stops. I know we don't give a damn about Burma. Oh, when we see it on the news tonight and in the New York Times, was it yesterday, big full-color picture above the fold, or was it today, of the monks marching and the nuns marching and people being clubbed as they always seem to be clubbed in these countries that happen to have oil and gas, and by God, we want it, and we will get it. How many military dictatorships have been supported by the United States? And Bush dares to present a rhetorical question like, why do they hate us? Oh, Jesus, come on, George. Come on. Come on. It's just unbelievable. And the part that just destroys me, I realize that it's much easier to deal with a dictatorship when you're a corporation. When you're a transnational corporation, democracy is such a pain in the ass. It really is. It's messy. It's you got to get consensus. Well, they got to have a vote. Well, it's up to the House. No, it's up to the Senate. Well, the Chamber of Deputies. Well, no, the parliamentary. And remember, capitalism hates that. Capitalism is as anti-freedom as any construct ever put together in the human mind. It is anti-family, anti-freedom, anti-life, anti-planet. But for some reason, we've decided, the people that run us, that this is the only way to do business with the rest of the world. Brutalize the populations, deny unions, deny religious freedom, or the freedom from religion. Deny human rights and civil rights and legislative rights. Deny it all! Set up a military government. And we can do business with that. Because that's quick. Hi, I got $30 million. You want it? Yes, done deal. Boom, that's it. All done. What about your people? Screw them. They'll never know. So here we have another religious revolt. It's being led by religious people, Buddhist monks. And Bush stands in front of the United Nations and talks about the atrocities being committed against the Burmese people and how he, George W. Bush, is just not going to stand for it anymore, and neither is his wife. How's that? They're not going to stand for it. Did we hear any suggestion from George W. Bush that maybe the transnational oil companies, of which he is directly related to and involved with, that they... perhaps they should stop supporting these fascist regimes and start dealing... oh, never mind. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. For a change, I would not dump my complaints with all there is to say. So hey God, you can sit back, you can lay
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. George W. Bush's stance on the SCHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance, that even a few Republicans have had the courage to step out and say, yeah, we think America's future somehow is tied up in our children. I know that sounds almost obscene coming from a Republican, but some of them are actually saying that. Gannon wrote into me the other night and said, you know, it struck me upon reading Bush's statement expressing his horror that the state children's health insurance program would be an incremental step toward the goal of government-run health care for every American. That it would be looked on, that statement will be looked upon in astonishment by future generations in much the same way people look back in incredulity at George Wallace's infamous remark of segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. People being initiated into history will think, my God, was it ever possible to publicly make such a statement and espouse such a position? Bush's. It's horrifying. It's horrifying. The other day, children were brought to press conferences around D.C., and there was a vote in the House, was it last night? 265 to 159, still not veto-proof, but 265 to 169 in favor of turning up the dial on the Children's Health Insurance Program, adding over the next 5 years, I think, $60 billion. Bush wants to add $5 billion. Now, that 265 to 159 vote looks like, wow, man. But that means 159 members of the United States House of Representatives said no, no to children's health. How many of those rat bastards voted yes, yes for war appropriation? How many of these rat bastards are going to vote yes for this new $180 billion? That the Bush crime family wants for more death and destruction in Iraq, Afghanistan, and soon Iran. 159 members of the United States House raise their middle finger to children. This is incredible. That's where you and I live. That's where we live. That's where we live. I can't get over that. Health insurance for kids. And 159 Republicans said, no, can't have it. Now, this House version resembles the Senate version, which would provide an additional $35 billion in funding over the next 5 years and bring total spending on the program to $60 billion. So we're looking at a $35 billion increase here. Bush wants $5 billion. And how is it going to be paid for? Your taxes are going up. No. They're going to get into your investment portfolio. No. They're going to raise your income tax. No. What are they going to do? How are they going to pay for it? An increase in the tax on cigarettes. Oh, no. It's somewhere between 60 cents and a dollar a pack that will be charged to smokers. People who, if they don't quit, are determined to commit suicide. That from an ex-smoker. Trust me. Guns and cigarettes, if used exactly as they are designed, kill. There's no debate about it, so I don't want to go there. But the 61 cent per pack tax was proposed in the Senate. The House, I believe, is talking about a dollar. Bush wants an additional $5 billion for S-CHIP over 5 years. He said, quote, I believe it's a step toward federalization of health care. Yeah, what Congress is proposing is beyond the scope of the program, and that's why I'm going to veto it. End quote. Now, the $5 billion doesn't even maintain the children who are on it now. And the Democrats and a few Republicans who are worried about getting reelected in 08 are saying, okay, we'll go along with it, we'll go along with it. So Bush is willing to cut off health care for low and middle income, low to low middle income children. He's all right with the idea of kicking children out of doctor's offices all across the country. This son of a bitch, this is the compassionate conservative. Oh, I know, that's so old. I mean, that is so last century, that statement. Oh, my God. Now, some Republicans reacted angrily to Bush's statements, raising the likelihood, according to the Washington Post, of significant Republican defections when the package comes to a vote next week. According to the Wall Street Journal, many Republicans, quote, worry about the potential political fallout from voting against health insurance for children. They worry about the potential political fallout. They don't worry about the children. You notice that. Of course you do. Okay. Charles Grassley, who called Bush on last Thursday to persuade him against vetoing it, Grassley's in favor of this, said that he, Grassley, is disappointed in the president's decision. Grassley added that Bush, quote, has been served wrong information about what our bill would do, end quote. He noted that Bush said it would provide health care coverage for children and families with annual incomes up to $83,000, which lawmakers say, including Grassley, is not true. Grassley said Bush's comments indicate a miserable lack of understanding of what we're doing and even what his own administration has done, end quote. And Orrin Hatch, sit down. Orrin Hatch said he's hopeful that Bush will recognize how hard we fought to keep this within reason. When asked if he would vote to override a veto, Hatch said, you bet your sweet bippy I will. And for a good Mormon like Orrin Hatch, that's getting down in the gutter and almost saying, you're goddamn right I will. About 25 before the hour, so on this S-CHIP program, which is a deliberate attempt by these rotten Democrats to bring socialism into our health system and to have a commissar in an obviously fascistic, democratic presidential administration making decisions as to whether or not you can have an appendectomy as you're lying writhing on the floor screaming in pain. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said, quote, President Bush, who ran on the promise to enroll millions of more children in his CHIP, is going back on his word and irresponsibly threatening to deny kids and working families the care they need, end quote. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said, quote, the question before the president really comes down to this. Will you stand with American children who through no fault of their own are uninsured, or will you go back on your own campaign promise and deny them coverage, end quote. Democratic Caucus Chair Rahm Emanuel said, quote, health care on the domestic side is what Iraq is on the foreign policy side. It's a top issue. When you veto it, you own it, end quote. Well, of course, Rahm Emanuel's statement didn't make any damn sense whatsoever. But the other two kind of made sense. But hey, Harry, why, I guess I should ask Nancy, why is impeachment off the table? Oh, never mind. That's such last year's question. It doesn't matter anymore. Now, here he is. Bush wants, what is it, $180 billion, what was it, Gates said? Bush says $50 billion, Gates says $180 billion, which is going to push the total of the Iraq War. You know what it's going to be at now? $700 billion. We're getting real close to that $1 trillion mark. Remember what the Republicans and the Project for New American Century psychopaths said? The real neocons? You remember what they said? And I think Cheney said it too, that Iraqi oil would pay for the war. Remember? $700 billion. $700 billion. And what the Democrats want is an additional $35 billion over 5 years for children's health care. And this bastard in the White House says, oh, well, that's pushing the budget. That's unnecessary spending. This is insane. This is not even, I mean, you don't even get into a discussion as to whether or not this man's a sociopath. This is crazy. Crazy talk. $700 billion for death and destruction. But not $7 billion, one-hundredth of that per year for 5 years for children's health care. Oh, my God. So Bush wants billions more for his occupation and slaughter in Iraq. But he doesn't want to pony up a few bucks to give health care for 10 million poor American children. Nancy Pelosi, who should be working on impeachment, had something to say about that.
President Bush should support the bipartisan SCHIP legislation for 10 million reasons. The 10 million children who will receive health care coverage should this bill become law. These 10 million children are joined by the Republicans and Democrats in Congress and in the governor's offices across the country. The SCHIP bill is supported by a coalition of 270 groups from the AARP to the YMCA. I'm disappointed that the president has issued a veto threat this morning against a bill that has so much bipartisan, indeed nonpartisan, support. The president is wrong when he says Democrats want a political victory. What we want is a bipartisan bill. What we want is health care for 10 million children. That is the goal supported by all Americans, regardless of party. And I hope the president will join us.
Oh, Nancy, Nancy, Nancy. Yeah, you hope the president will join us, and I hope I win the Georgia lottery. And as far as being a nonpartisan bill, no, not quite. When you have 159 Democrats out of, I mean Republicans out of what, 206? 159 say no to children's health care. No, screw the little boogers. I never liked curtain climbers anyway. I don't like children. And besides, I'm a Republican. I care nothing about children, minorities, peace, love, decency, honesty, truth, justice, or anything. 159 Republicans said no. Now, we know Bush wants billions for his war and his death and his destruction, as opposed to funding health care for poor children. But how does he feel about children's education?
And so if I called it to Congress, it's don't water down this good law. Don't go backwards when it comes to educational excellence. Don't roll back accountability.
Accountability.
We've come too far to turn back.
Amen.
So Congress needs to work with this administration to pass legislation that helps give our children the education they deserve. As yesterday's positive report card shows, children do learn when standards are high and results are measured.
Children do learn when standards are high and results are measured. Mr. Bush, by any standard, by any standard, your No Child Left Behind is a joke. A bad joke, a lie, a fraud. America's children are not being educated. What did he say? What is that? Let me find that again. God already threw it in the trash. Let me see what he said here. Yeah. As yesterday's positive report card shows, children do learn when standards are high and results are measured. Children do learn. M.O. Children's. It's just astonishing. All right. Well, I am going to ask our associate producer and engineer, Ian, to throw wide the gates now so your phone calls can come in. And let's chat. The number here is 800-989-1480. If you can, try to focus on the topics I've tossed out there tonight, because I would like for the listeners to hear an opinion other than mine about these issues, all right? So if you'd like to call, we welcome your call now, 800-989-1480. Let's start with Kirk in Worcester, Mass., listening via the Internet. Hey, Kirk.
Hi. I wanted to talk about this Iran amendment. I read what Think Progress reported on it, and I heard the same thing on the Tom Hartman show. These paragraphs were taken out of the Iran amendment, that it should be the policy of the United States to combat, contain, and stop the violent activities, destabilizing influence inside Iraq of the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran, its foreign facilitators such as Lebanese Hezbollah and its indigenous Iraqi proxies. Paragraph 4, to support the prudent, collaborated use of all instruments of United States national power in Iraq, including diplomatic, economic, intelligence, and military instruments in support of policy described in paragraph 3 with respect to proxies to the government of Iran and its proxies.
Okay, now wait, just a second. Up until your last use of the word Iran there, you've been saying Iraq. Are you aware of that?
Well, I'm just reading it.
You're talking about the Lieberman-Kyle Iran amendment.
Yeah, I'm reading it directly from Think Progress.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we're on the same page here. This has nothing to do with Iraq. It has to do with Iran.
Right, I know
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah, also, this paragraph was put in. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates stated on September 16, 2007, that I think the administration believes at this point that continuing to try and deal with the Iranian threat, the Iranian challenge through diplomatic and economic means is by the preferable approach that one we are using. We always say all options on the table, but clearly diplomatic and economic approaches is one that we are pursuing.
Right. Now, that, of course, that's for public consumption. But behind the scenes, Bush and Cheney now have their war declaration that they can put into effect anytime they want to, thanks to Lieberman and John Kyle and approximately 26 Democrats who voted in favor of more war.
Yeah. I'm hoping the House gets a chance to have a say in this, have a vote on this. And maybe stop it. I doubt they'll stop it if they do get a vote on it. It's so disappointing that
Oh, it is. It's just horrifying, and I hope it wakes people up to the fact that the leading Democrats who are voting in favor of more death, Harry Reid, Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton. Now, whether or not that affects somebody's vote for Hillary Clinton,
Mike Revelle mentioned it at the Democratic debate just a few minutes ago. So.
Kirk? I think we lost Kirk. All right, Kirk, I got the gist of what you said. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Who made me judge and jury?
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls here. John is calling from Baltimore, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
Hey, you are.
Yeah, glad to get through. Hey, look, first of all, Michael Vick's not the dumbest bastard in the world. That would be the guy in the White House.
Yeah.
Mike could only come in at the very best a second. Now, on to this corporate whore, Hillary. I'm in total agreement with you there. Where they get this label of liberal when they describe her, they had to just pull that right out of their ass, because with every speech and every position she takes, she reveals herself to me to be more and more the corporate candidate. Just look at this vote for this amendment. I think in some ways it would probably please her if they went ahead and just invaded before the election. It gives her another platform to expel some of this bullshit that she keeps shooting at us.
John. I know you listen on Sirius Satellite Radio, John, and some of the programs do have no restrictions on radio, but or on your language. But my program is carried by Sirius. We are over-the-air broadcasting, and we got to be careful. And I don't know why the language I use is permissible, but the word that you just used is not. Go figure. But anyway, I kind of get your point, John. LaShonda is calling from Austin, Texas, listening on the Internet. Hey, LaShonda, how you doing?
I'm fine. How you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm all right. I'm okay.
Yes, I'm calling for two reasons. I will try to keep them short and sweet, as usual.
Okay.
The first one is the Bill O'Reilly thing. Oh, my goodness. It's 2007, Mike, and we're still having discussions about white people talking bad about black folks. See, I didn't grow up in the generation with the whole civil rights era. My grandparents did, and I was raised by them. So I know all the stories, and, you know, they always told me that, oh, you know, grandbaby, things don't get better for your generation. But you know what I'm saying? Here it is now, and we've got someone like O'Reilly. I don't like O'Reilly. I used to watch Bill O'Reilly when he was on A Current Affair giving celebrity gossip. I will say that.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that?
I vaguely do. I know that's where he came from, yes.
Yes, but, you know, for him to say something like that about Sylvia's, I've been to Sylvia's before, and it's a really nice restaurant. It's a lot of different people that come in there of all races. But to say something like, you know, oh, they weren't using, you know, MS and stuff like that, like, oh, come on now.
I was waiting to hear him say, and, you know, the damnedest thing, I was sitting there watching, and some of these black folks were actually using knives and forks.
You see, like, oh, my God, they weren't using their fingers and toes. Can you believe that? They've evolved. You know, it's just so crazy. And for Al Sharpton, I'm very disappointed in Reverend Al, because right now I would have expected him to be on TV sweating out his perm talking about, no, you didn't go there. But he's
I wish he would. I realize that what Don Imus said was a lot nastier. And what O'Reilly said was, I think, here's the thing. I think O'Reilly's statement shows the depths that racism can be ingrained in a white mind. O'Reilly is still wandering around wondering what the hell he said. He thinks he was being complimentary.
Right, that's not a compliment.
No.
You know what I mean?
No,
that is no, and let me tell you, Mike, you know I'm from Detroit, but my husband's white. My husband is from the swamps of Southeast Texas. He's listening right now. No offense, baby.
The swamps? Oh, my God.
And he is just like, sometimes we have these discussions, and he's just like, I can't believe that, you know, people still say this kind of stuff. And it just blows our mind. And I don't understand that it's the 21st century and people are still caught up on racism. And I remember I told a white guy, a couple years ago, I was like, you know, you think that you're better than black folks, Mexicans, or whatever. I was like, but let me tell you something, boo. When they come to get all of us for the camp, you will be right there with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And they don't understand that. Second thing I was going to tell you, we did a trip this past week to Detroit, me and the baby. Mm-hmm. And, Mike, I thought about you as we were walking through, because we had a connecting flight at Bush International. And I swear to God, it was something out of 1984. As soon as we stepped off the plane, you heard this little lady, and she's like, you know, today's terrorism alert is orange. That means there could be a probable risk for terrorism. Remember, terrorism is not a joke. If you make a joke, you will be detained.
Right.
And thank you for flying from George Bush International Airport.
You know, while you were doing that in Bush Airport, I was in San Diego Airport, Lindbergh Field, listening to the same announcement.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they come out. I think all the airports say that. We are in a orange, whatever, the orange configuration, the threat of terrorism. And I think it's because it's an airport. And I'm listening to that on the way out. You know, I flew out from Atlanta, went to Hartsfield-Jackson Airport, and I hear the same damn thing. On the way back, I hear it in San Diego. Hear the same damn thing. We're in a state of orange, and I have to carry my my toothpaste and my deodorant in a plastic see-through bag, and get it out and take off my shoes and let these folks look in my bag and see what I'm carrying. Well, I've got some shaving cream here, and I have some toothpaste, and this is deodorant. I guess that qualifies as a liquid, even though it's banned roll-on. And let me see what else have I got here. Oh my God, there's a razor blade. Well, you know, I went to a meeting. I have to shave. So, you know, they let you go on with a razor blade now. But
They made the baby take his shoes off, too. I was like, ain't that about something? I was like, oh, my God. The guy was like, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Little man's got to take his shoes off,
right. Oh, my God.
It was crazy. And as I was going through the airport, I was telling him, I was like, baby, it didn't used to be this way.
Yeah.
It really didn't. I'm just really afraid of what is it going to be like, you know, next year. Is everybody going to be out in, like, body suits and ski masks? What do you call them? Big gas mask. It's crazy.
I hear you, LaShonda. Hey, listen, take
all right,
it easy. How's the baby?
He is doing fine. We went home for his birthday party and had a great time.
That's great. That's good. All right. Well, go kiss your swamp thing. And we'll talk again. Take care, LaShonda. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Sing along.
Like a fish on a hole, like a knife from an old-fashioned book.
All right, welcome back. Final hour of the Malloy program tonight. It's about 7 past the hour. The number here is 800-989-1480. What? Two open lines? All right, let's start with Art, who's calling from New York City, listening on the Internet. Hey, Art, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Art?
Very well, thank you. I was listening to you talk to LaShonda a little while ago, and I had to kind of laugh. I remember when we were kids, there used to be a humor column in Reader's Digest called Life in These United States.
Oh, I remember it well. Yeah.
I think we should come up with a new one and call it Life in Fascist America. I want to tell you something briefly. I'm here in Manhattan, and this time of year, every year, we have the good fortune of hosting the General Assembly.
Right.
And one of the things that happens is convoys of black cars and police cars drive all over the city all night long, ferrying all these dignitaries around.
Right.
A little while ago, I stepped outside to go to the store, and on my way back home, one of these convoys came down the little side street, apparently on their way to a fancy little restaurant. And, you know, these guys are entitled, they should be able to enjoy the city.
Sure.
But one thing that happened that I've never seen before in all the years that I've been here, as they pulled to a stop in the middle of the block, a handful of New York's finest got out of the rear cars in riot gear holding machine guns.
Oh, my God.
And they stopped all of us pedestrians from walking down the sidewalk, even across the street from this restaurant for about 10 minutes until this guy could be safely ensconced in the restaurant.
Wow.
At which time, they waved us along. Mike, I can't tell you how my blood is still boiling right now.
Oh, I know. I can only imagine. I can only imagine.
And you know, it took every ounce of strength I had not to start screaming at these people for what they've done to my city, to my country, and to my way of life.
Yeah.
And I knew that you there are a lot of people who, when they hear the word fascism, they say, "Well, you know, we're kind of dancing around it, but it's not really that bad." Well, for those people who think that, they should know that we're knee-deep in it right now.
It is so subtle, especially when it's homegrown fascism, when it's not imposed from without, when it's homegrown, like in Spain or Italy or Germany or any country that has European country that's experienced this. It starts out as something very subtle, something that is inconvenience, but then all of a sudden you have people in battle gear stopping pedestrian traffic so some dignitary can enter a restaurant.
Yeah, it's stunning. If I don't want to take up too much of your time, if I may say one other thing briefly.
Sure.
Last week, I think it was last Thursday, when everything came down in the Senate regarding the General Petraeus ad.
Right.
I was so offended by these spineless Democrats who are not willing to throw the gauntlet down and challenge this administration that my response to that was to call up MoveOn.org and immediately donate money.
I hear you.
They're the only ones who have a spine.
I hear you.
And I will continue to give them more and more if they turn out to be one of the only groups that dare to speak out against this.
I support that completely.
I know you do. Anyway, Mike, it's great to talk to you. I'm a longtime listener. Keep up the good work and give time to somebody else.
All right. Thanks, Art. Appreciate it. Regarding what Art was just talking about, I've just got to revisit that MoveOn.org ad that even Democrats who should know better, pundits, are saying it was a big mistake. I still don't know why it was a big mistake. I read the ad. I saw the ad the day it came out. And it was a bit shocking, but the reason it was shocking is because we have allowed this country to go so far, as I was just pointing out, into this fascist mindset that when somebody says, wait a second, and calls a liar, I don't give a damn if he's in a uniform, if he's in a priest's smock, or where's the yarmulke, I don't care. If he's a liar, he's a liar. And Petraeus is a liar, an absolute liar. And to see all these people lining up to say, ah, well, MoveOn.org shouldn't have done that. Yeah. Okay. Well, Brent Badowski has an idea. Here's a way the Democrats could answer that Republican resolution regarding Move On last week. And Brent writes the following. Senators Jim Webb, Jack Reed, and Daniel Inouye, and every other Democrat who has served in uniform should go to the Senate floor together and call for a vote on a resolution similar to the following. Be it resolved that the United States Senate deplores actions taken by President Bush that have led to preventable casualties for those killed or wounded in action as a result of the continuing failure to provide body armor and fully protected vehicles. The Senate deplores the President's lack of support for key areas of military medicine and care, which has resulted in unacceptable shortcomings in treatment for many wounded troops and veterans. The Senate deplores the President's failure to devote sufficient resources to veterans and the resulting harm done through veteran centers that are undersupported, and treatment of disabled veterans that in many cases is grossly unfair and punitive. The Senate deplores the President's lack of support for homeless veterans at a time when homelessness among veterans is rising. The Senate deplores the mismanagement, crimes, and corruption that surrounds the President's policies of occupation in Iraq, in which tens of billions of American dollars and tens of billions of dollars worth of Iraqi cash have been lost, stolen, or otherwise fallen into the hands of criminals and those attacking American troops. The Senate deplores the corruption and mismanagement under the President's watch that has permitted huge volumes of American weapons to be stolen or lost, weapons that in some cases have fallen into enemy hands because of presidential neglect, thereby creating life endangering harm to American troops. Be it therefore resolved that the United States Senate deplores these actions and calls on the President to immediately meet with bipartisan congressional leaders to address these crises that threaten our troops and seek solutions that have not been forthcoming from the President because of long-term mismanagement, failures, and corruptions on matters essential to the safety of American troops in combat. The above draft resolution is a partial statement of presidential failures that are directly harming our troops, and Senate Republicans should be forced either to join us in deploring the damage the President has done to our troops, or, if they filibuster against our efforts to support American troops, to vote on this resolution for as long as it takes to get the troops the support they need and which the President has failed to provide. And then let the Republicans vote with Democrats or against the troops. The Senate deplores an ad. Okay. Susan is calling from Oakland Park, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Mike. Or should I say Akhtung? My senator would vote against that resolution. He's a Democrat, so-called, Bill Nelson.
Yeah, Bill Nelson would vote.
Yeah.
You're right.
I happen to have just finished reading Scott Ritter's book called Target Iran, The Whole Truth About the White House's Plans for Regime Change.
Yes.
Can I read a couple of sentences from it?
A couple of sentences? Go ahead.
Yeah. First, he's the former UN weapon inspector.
Right. And Marine.
U.S. Marine, advisor to General Schwarzkopf, and a Republican.
Right.
I understand.
Yes, yes.
Once again, the world finds itself on the brink of another Middle East war in which the United States is using trumped-up charges centered around false threats of weapons of mass destruction as a smokescreen to hide its true policy objectives of regime change. Americans have allowed themselves to be cowed by a Bush administration together with a compliant Congress and media, which grossly misrepresents Iran's nuclear energy program as being something it is not.
Okay, hold it right there. Something it is not. Let me do this break, Susan. We'll come back and you can finish up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everybody knows. Get your range on. It's Mike Malloy.
We're talking with Susan in Oakland Park, Florida, and she's sharing with us a couple of sentences from a new book by Scott Ritter, former Marine officer, advisor to General Schwarzkopf, and weapons inspector. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, shall I continue? You want to hear that one again?
Just to go, back up one sentence.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Once again, I'm finding my place in the book.
Oh, okay.
Once again, the world finds itself on the brink of another Middle East war in which the United States is using trumped-up charges centered around false threats of weapons of mass destruction as a smokescreen to hide its true policy objectives of regime change. Americans have allowed... These are on separate pages. I'm omitting a lot. But Americans have allowed themselves to be cowed by a Bush administration, together with a compliant Congress and media, which grossly misrepresents Iran's nuclear energy program as being something it is not. The inability of the U.S. Congress to act in a rational manner means that the stage has been set for a replay of the environment that existed in Washington, D.C. in the months prior to the invasion of Iraq in 2003. The implausibility of an Iranian nuclear weapons program will once again be drowned out by the fear-inducing rhetoric of the Bush administration, which will once again hype up a non-existent threat while leading America and the world down the path of yet another war of aggression in Iran.
Yeah, it's just astonishing, Susan, first of all, why the Democratic Party leadership in the House and the Senate do not realize that impeachment at this point in our history is not a political issue. It's an issue of survival as to whether or not we're going to survive as a democratic republic. I don't know what it is, lack of will or the presence of cowardice. I don't know what is stopping Pelosi from allowing the House Judiciary Committee to begin hearings on these articles of impeachment that, among others, Dennis Kucinich has filed. So, when you read something like that written by Scott Ritter and other people who, there's something out right now that, Daniel Ellsberg, has written about how the United States we've experienced a coup. It's already occurred. And these are people, Scott Ritter, Daniel Ellsberg, these are not people who are interested in high-flying political rhetoric. These are people who are trying to tell us something. And I just don't understand why...
I don't know why so few of us are listening.
Well, nor do I understand why it is not crystal clear to the Democratic Party leadership in the House and the Senate that this guy has to be removed. I don't know, Susan.
There's another thing. Every time I hear that the House and the Senate have too much to do to pass this bill or pass that bill, and that's the reason why impeachment is off the table, they have too much work to do, when we know that it's going to be vetoed. What is the point of, I don't care if they pass 1,000 bills, unless they provide money for this so-called war effort, which isn't a war. It's the result of a criminal act. It's an occupation. And unless it bears directly on that or some other Bush program that suits the neocon, Cheney, Halliburton agenda, it's going to be vetoed, and it will not be overridden. So what is the point of wasting their time passing legislation?
I know. I hear you. All right, Susan, thanks for calling. Thanks for sharing the Scott Ritter stuff. I appreciate it. Take care. We'll talk again. Donald in Augusta has this. Mike, I just finished watching the so-called Democratic debate, and then in parentheses he adds, I mean discussion, on MSNBC. Basically, Hillary Clinton is running as the mediator and commissioner-in-chief. On every question, she would not take a position. On Social Security, which mirrored her answers on most all other questions, she said she would not put anything on the table or off the table on stabilizing Social Security. She said she would have a commission research the issue. Sound familiar? Bush has now had how many commissions that led to nothing? So basically, Hillary said to the voters, vote for me. I have strong principles and positions. I just won't tell you what they are. But don't worry. I will make a sound decision based on my values and principles, which I won't tell you about, in making my decisions on the big issues of the day. Can someone please tell me why she's leading in the polls? She is promising nothing. So if and when she gets into office, she has to deliver nothing. We're just setting ourselves up for a major fall again. Yeah. I don't know why she's leading. Donald, I have no idea. I just the Clinton name. I don't know. I have a very strong feeling, regardless of this half-witted rhetoric on the Republican side. Well, we hope she runs because then, you know what? She may get the presidency, but because she's such a polarizing figure, it means the beating we're going to take as Republicans won't be as severe in the House and the Senate. You know, to hell with these Republicans. You know, to hell with that attitude. As far as Hillary Clinton is concerned, the real reason that I think the Republicans are not going out of their way to demonize her at this point is because corporate America has told them, back off. We want her. Before the hour, back to your phone calls. Todd is calling from Johnstown, PA, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Todd.
Hey. What's going on, Mike? Here's my Svengali. Hey, I wanted to just touch on something because we've been talking about Hillary pretty much all night. And, you know, I think that painting Hillary as a liberal, not necessarily as damaging to her as it is to people who actually are liberals, candidates who actually are, because
right.
By definition, moderates and conservatives, you know, don't want to go against the status quo. And by saying Hillary is a liberal who is not, you're making people who actually are liberals, like John Edwards, seem like they're complete freaks, and people like Dennis Kucinich, like they're aliens.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
And it's simply a way so that, you know, whenever it comes time, and I don't think that Hillary's actually going to win the nomination.
You don't? You really
don't? No, because there's you know, so many Democrats, you and I, who come November are going to say, well, what is Hillary going to offer us that we haven't seen in the last 8 years?
Well, I'll tell you what it is. She's not George Bush.
Certainly.
And that's about it. I honestly, I'll tell you, I'm beginning to believe that it's a lock for Hillary unless Al Gore gets in the race.
I'd love to see Al Gore get into the race, even if we're at the expense of my choice, who's John Edwards. But Hillary Clinton is doing absolutely nothing. The healthcare plan that you came out with 2 weeks ago is a joke. It's taking something, the expense of which, astronomical as it is, and you're adding to it an entire nation's worth of demand. Simple economics tells you that it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, it doesn't.
And this is her big plan for healthcare. If Hillary Clinton gets the nomination, this isn't going to get any better, regardless of if it is Bush or not, because Bush has already set it in motion, and Hillary will do absolutely nothing to stop.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but so many people, I don't think any longer, Todd, can make a distinction between a corporate Democrat and a liberal Democrat. And I'll tell you why. They don't really listen to Dennis Kucinich. They don't really listen all that much to some of the more moderate Democrats, whether it's Bill Richardson or Edwards. What they listen to are the pundits who constantly refer to Hillary Clinton as a liberal. And, you know she's not. I think most of the people who listen to this program know she's not. But the reason I think she's going to get the vote, the nomination, and we'll know soon enough, when Super Tuesday in February?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll know soon enough who is going to be the nominee, because once that Super Tuesday occurs, that's it. It's over. It's over.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I can't possibly, and I'm calling from Johnstown, PA, you know, John Murtha country through
right.
and through.
Right.
And I wish that I could say in this area, I could, you know, really say that there would be a chance that a Democrat like John Edwards would have a shot at taking this area. They do not. You know, I can't get your show, but I have two or three stations that carry Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and that ilk.
Sure.
There are so many places exactly like this one across the country. I can't possibly say that. You know, I the only thing I'm worried about is that people are going to get bullied into voting for Hillary Clinton, which is exactly what's happening. That she's the electable candidate when she's going to do absolutely. I mean, there's no progression to her whatsoever. But I don't want to take up any more of your time as well. Now you probably have a few callers, so thanks for your thanks for.
All right, well, thanks, Todd. I'm glad you called. I certainly get what you're saying. Lisa is calling from Lake Crystal, Minnesota, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Lisa.
Hi. I was calling to talk about Bill O'Reilly. I kind of have a different view on his comments that he made.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really know a lot of African Americans when I was growing up because I lived in, you know, northern Minnesota, which really doesn't have a wide variety of people, just pretty much white people.
Right.
And I guess I kind of had almost a similar view as Bill O'Reilly in the respect that I wasn't really shown any other, you know, sides to the African-American, you know, way of life. I probably would have reacted somewhat similarly, although I would have probably kept my comments to myself. But, you know, I look at it, and I think it's been somewhat blown out of proportion. I'm not an O'Reilly fan, don't get me wrong, but I think he was coming kind of almost from that mindset where he.
All right. Well, let me comment. I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate your honesty. If you live in an area of the country that really is kind of isolated and monochromatic, and you're not aware of other cultures, whether it's black or Native American or Asian or whatever it is, I can understand. You know, having a fairly limited view where it concerns you know, the social life of other groups of people. But Bill O'Reilly is not from a small town in northern Minnesota. Bill O'Reilly has been in television for 25 years. Bill O'Reilly works in media in this country. He identifies himself as a political/social commentator and pundit. For him to make that statement is
no different than Imus making his comment in a way, but it's not a specific.
But for O'Reilly to say what he said is a classic example of embedded racism. Now, in your case, if you had made the same comments, and I mean no offense by this, but it would be, I think, an example of ignorance of other cultures. Mm-hmm. Ignorance is curable. Racism or stupidity is terminal. It can't be cured.
And my husband also, I was born up in Canada and stuff. I mean, I'm an American citizen now, but, like, my husband didn't really have any clue about Canada at all. he had grandparents that lived kind of near the Canadian border, so he'd like basically had right. to go over the border to say he was in Canada.
So it's very understandable that you would not have a working understanding of other cultures, whether it's African American or I don't know, a Polish American. I don't know what sort of neighbors and family and community that you had. I grew up in a real polyglot community that included just about everybody. And there was, it was a lot of weirdness because when you include everybody, you're going to have all these different rivalries and factions and so on and so forth. But
well, and it was really weird for me to go from, the childhood that I had, then going off to college
sure.
only just a couple hours away. And it was such an eye opener. I mean, there was every race and culture under the sun. I'm just like, holy cow, this is like a whole new world to me.
But there you are. You saw a new world, and to whatever degree that you did, you realized it was not, we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, and I think you had that moment, which happens to a lot of people who come from small towns. It doesn't make any difference what their race is. A lot of black folk in small southern towns where the town was predominantly, if not exclusively, black, and there have been towns like that in the South, have no idea of the larger white culture until they got exposed to it. Now, they didn't have to go away to school or move to New York to become exposed to it. All they had to do is, move to the next biggest town down the road and go to work for white folks in their house, and all of a sudden, oh, my God, what's this? So I think what you experienced is a fairly rational response to your upbringing. It's just ignorance.
And I lived with kind of a Bill O'Reilly type stepfather. He, his viewpoint on African Americans, he claimed he wasn't racist, but the comments he would make were quite the contrary.
Right.
And I had a friend in college whose last name was White. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't. And my stepfather actually asked me that flat out. He goes, "Well, is he?" And I go, "No, he's not." And he just walked away.
Well,
I stood there dumbfounded. I'm just like, why does it matter what color his skin is? He's my friend. It shouldn't matter.
All right. Well, you are light years ahead of Bill O'Reilly. So, Lisa, listen, thanks. I appreciate your call. I appreciate what you had to say. Very interesting. Thank you. Thank you. But there's a big difference between just being kind of unexposed to certain cultures or certain cultures, whether they're indigenous or transplanted, and being an ignoramus racist, which is what I don't think there's no question that O'Reilly is a racist. I don't think there's any question that Don Imus was a racist, is a racist. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Ten before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight, our associate producer, who also answered your calls. Also to thanks to Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, and Catherine Bay, our executive producer. See if we can squeeze in a couple more phone calls here. Mark is calling from Florence, Oregon, listening on KOTJ, is that right?
Yes, that's right, Mike.
KOTJ.
I believe. That T may be a P.
I think it's KOPJ.
Yes, sir. Great to talk with you, Mike.
Actually, I think it's KPOJ.
Oh, but that's we're really in trouble now.
But that's all right, okay. Mark. Thanks for checking in. What you got on your mind?
Well, Mike, back in the first hour, I get a time delay out here, of course. I didn't hear it that long ago, but it seems more fresh to me now, but I'm sure it does to you, too. As far as the Iran invasion amendment that you were speaking of,
right?
This Congress is actually, there was a politician back in the 40s, I believe, I can't remember exactly who it was, you may know, but said there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two main parties.
Well, it was actually in the 60s, and it was George Wallace, former governor of Alabama, who ran for president on the independent ticket.
Yeah, well, I think he really spoke the truth then, and it applies more than ever now. It was basically arranged just to shift the power over, but it's all the same party, just as the upcoming presidential election. Everybody believes Hillary will win. I've heard it predicted by several notable people that are good at that, and that she will win, and that it will be the same agenda, because I have researched it so long, and there is an overarching agenda on a global level that is so much larger than even the United States invasion of Iraq. That's just a part of it, Mike. And I think eventually we need to get to what the specific plans are that these few wealthy people on the planet have in store for us for our future, because they have a great way of keeping us distracted as to where we really don't see the larger picture. And at this point in time, they're so far with their agenda as to where it's really, I believe it's going to, things will get worse in the world situation in various areas, and terrorism also, if that need be brought in at whatever time from as we speak here on out to the future. That seems to always hang over our heads for eternity, looking into the future. How could we ever be rid of it now? So I appreciate everything you do, Mike. You're right at the forefront of it, and I just think that we really eventually and hopefully as soon as possible need to look at the global level and get past the national politics. That's very important, and it's very important to social programs in this country. And they do hold us as a bargaining chip that way for our own political, social, translated into a social, for the welfare of all the people in the country. That's right. What our tax dollars are supposed to go for.
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to do. I hear you.
Right.
I hear you loud and clear. Thanks, Mike. Mark, I mean, I appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot. I would say the one preventive that these people are not counting on, you know, those who have a particular agenda for the rest of the world, as Mark points out, you know, it's not just a U.S. thing, it's a global thing. But the one preventive that is stopping it all in its tracks, and I don't know that these international fascists understand this yet, and that is the horrendous environmental crisis that we're facing right now, this global crisis of climate change. Not that, you know, having the planet's topography totally change because of ice sheet melting and hurricanes and temperate zones becoming subtropical, not that that in and of itself would stop these fascists. But the fact that it's going to be so critical, you know, usually in times like that, if you look at history, you find that totalitarians move in very easily. The people become truly terrified, not just this fake terrorism that Bush has instilled in the American public, to a very successful degree, by the way. But when the population becomes truly terrified by physical events on the planet that have nothing to do with politics, you know, they sometimes will turn to fascist slash religious leaders who think that a Nazi god of some sort is going to save them. I don't think that's going to happen this time, because it's not a hurricane or a tidal wave or an earthquake or a volcano going off. This is the entire planet at risk. And I think, I'm hoping, at least anyway, Mark, that this situation is so critical, and that people are going to become so aware so rapidly as to how critical it is, that the idea of politics being used as a way to further divide and conquer and take control and is going to just be rendered utterly meaningless. I'm hoping that people, human beings, are going to understand, whoops, it's finally happened. It's really finally happened. We have got to work together on a global basis if we want to survive as a species. Now, that could be very naive on my part, too, because I don't know that that's ever happened. Of course it hasn't in the history of the human race. You know, you look different from me, so I have to kill you. You smell different from me, so I have to cut your head off. You speak a different language, so I have to ram a spear through you. And all of a sudden, that has got to stop. It's got to stop if it does not stop. Well. But I get your point, Ron. Or I mean Mark. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.